tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hey everybody, this is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory, and welcome back to another episode of Naturopathic Earth Radio. I am very excited that you've returned. Before we begin on this podcast episode about alcoholism rising in America, I want to thank Dr. Knighton for joining us. If you have not heard the previous episode, I interviewed a naturopathic doctor, Dr. Knighton, and we talked about naturopathy and some of the benefits of perhaps visiting a naturopathic doctor over a typical allopathic doctor. It was so much fun. I've been wanting to begin interviewing people. And I, as any of you have known, since the beginning of Confessions of an Obese Child 1 and 2, I'm like the only person on earth who has problems figuring out how to do a live recording of somebody over the phone or through Skype. So I finally figured out, I'm like, well, why don't I just reach out to people in San Antonio who are involved in naturopathy and interview them? So that's what I did. So you're going to have a couple more live interviews coming up. I have one of a holistic dentist coming up. That's going to be great. I have one of a functional medicine doctor. We have one of hydrotherapy. So we have them coming down the pipe. But we still are going to here and there have the typical MPE episode where I highlight a certain toxin or a certain eating tip or some malady that's afflicting America. So today we're going to talk about alcoholism. I was perusing my articles online and I came upon one from the Washington Post from August 11th. So 1 in 8 American adults is an alcoholic. 1 in 8. Now you might think, well, that's not a lot. Well, 12% is pretty high. Pretty high. So let's read here. A new study published in JAMA Psychiatry. JAMA is the Journal of American Medical Association. JAMA and Lancet probably are the two most prestigious magazines or journals, I should say, in the world. A new study published in JAMA Psychiatry this month found that the rate of alcohol use disorder, or what's colloquially known as alcoholism, rose by a shocking 49% in the first decade of the 2000s in the noughts. I don't even know why we call them the noughts. Why don't we call them like the zeros? 49% rise. 1 in 8 American adults, or 12.7% of the U.S. population, now meets the diagnostic criteria for alcohol use disorder, according to the study. The study's authors characterize the findings as a serious and overlooked public health crisis, noting that alcoholism is a significant driver of mortality from a cornucopia of ailments. And we know this. We know alcoholism increases your chances of getting many medical maladies, probably most famously cancer, and of course cirrhosis of the liver, but also fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, if you know women who drink a lot of alcohol when they're pregnant, high blood pressure, the host of cardiovascular diseases, strokes, pancreatitis, which leads to pancreatic cancer many times, which is the worst cancer to get, type 2 diabetes, and various other maladies. So alcoholism is a major problem. It's a major problem. It totally screws with your body, as I think most of you guys know. Indeed, the study's findings are bolstered by the fact that deaths from a number of these conditions, particularly alcohol-related cirrhosis and hypertension, have risen concurrently over the study period. So this is in the early noughts. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 88,000 people a year die of alcohol-related causes. 88,000 people a year, much more than breast cancer. So where's Susan G. Komen? Why don't we have some sort of alcohol Susan G. Komen month in the NFL or whatnot? Where, you know, I don't know if you guys know, but like I think it's October in the NFL, they all wear pink ribbons and so forth. Look, and don't get me wrong, I think breast cancer is a major affliction, but I have issues with Susan G. Komen. I think they overlook a lot of the links of household cleaners and stuff like that, plastics that are linked to cancer, and they just kind of overlook that, but that's a separate issue. But 88,000 people a year dying of alcohol-related causes is significant. and it's more than twice the annual death toll of opiate overdose. So I think a lot of you know that that is a major problem now in America, especially with the poor, is that opium overuse. So hydrocodones, the hydrocodone drugs, for example, would be the most famous ones, the Vicodins, which is hydrocodone, Tylenol, those kind of drugs, major problem right now, major problem. And you see some documentaries coming out, some news articles coming out, and I think the awareness is coming. But it's a major problem. And I can just speak colloquially. I know that in colleges and high schools, prescription drugs is the biggest issue. You know, for sure, every high school's got weed. The dissemination of Adderall and Xanax and Concerta and antidepressants, but typically it's going to be like the benzos and then the ADD drugs and then Vicodin. They're everywhere. I mean, it's very easy to get these drugs. And so unfortunately, you see a lot of high school kids and college kids taking these prescription drugs. And then later on, they're going to get hooked. You know, benzos are addictive. And of course, hydrocodone is habit-forming as well. So how did the study's authors judge who counts as an alcoholic? That's a good question. The study's data comes from the National Epidemiological Survey on Alcohol and Related Conditions, a nationally representative survey administered by the National Institutes of Health. Survey respondents were considered to have alcohol use disorder if they met the widely used diagnostic criteria for either alcohol abuse or dependence. All right, so let's go over this. What is this? The textbook definition of what alcohol abuse is? It's similar to the DSM, which the mental health professionals use to diagnose depression and anxiety and oppositional defiance disorder and schizophrenia, all the mental health things. They have a little book that has a criteria. So here is a criteria. So let's see if you know anybody who fits this criteria, or perhaps even you fit this criteria. So, an individual must have exhibited at least one of the following characteristics in the past year. One, recurrent use of alcohol resulting in a failure to fulfill major role of obligations at work, school, or home. For example, repeated absences or poor work performance related to alcohol use, alcohol-related absences, suspensions, or expulsions from school, neglect of children or household. One. Two, recurrent alcohol use in situations in which it is physically hazardous, for example, driving an automobile. Three, recurrent alcohol-related legal problems, so in other words, arrest for alcohol-related disorderly conduct. Four, continued alcohol use despite having persistent or recurrent social or interpersonal problems caused by or exacerbated by the effects of alcohol. In other words, arguments with spouses about the consequences of intoxication. So that's number four. So you have someone who's telling you you're an alcoholic, you need to stop drinking. So if you have one of those four, you are by the definition alcoholic. Now we're going to mention the amount of alcohol you need to be considered one of these things. So for a diagnosis of alcohol dependence, which is on a lower level, an individual must experience at least three of the following seven. And you can find this, I'll put this link for these, the actual criteria on the show notes for this podcast. One, need for markedly increased amounts of alcohol to achieve intoxication or desired effect, or markedly diminished effect with continued use of the same amount of alcohol. So you need to drink more to get the effect. Two, characteristic withdrawal syndrome for alcohol, or drinking or using a closely related substance to relieve or avoid withdrawal symptoms. So drinking more to avoid the withdrawal. Three, drinking a larger amount or over a longer period than intended. Four, persistent desire or one or more unsuccessful efforts to cut down on or control your drinking. So you're making the attempt, but it's not working. Five, important social, occupational, or recreational activities given up or reduced because of drinking. You just don't do what you used to do. Kind of like with orthorexia, if you listen to the episode on orthorexia, you stop hanging out with friends because you're obsessed with food. Six, a great deal of time spent in activities necessary to obtain, to use, or to recover from the effects of drinking. Yeah, those mythical hangover drinks, right? Seven, continue drinking despite knowledge of having a persistent or recurrent physical or psychological problem that is likely to be caused or exacerbated by drinking. So you're drinking, but and yet you know it is bad for you. Meeting either of those criteria, abuse or dependence, would lead to an individual being characterized as having an alcoholic use disorder. Now, let's actually go to the guideline of how much drinking you have to drink to classify as one of these, because that talks more about behavior. This is actually the amount. And I got this at health.gov, and I'll put a link for this one as well. It talks about the certain amounts that each drink would have to be, because of course, if you're drinking a glass of wine worth of whiskey, that's going to get you a lot drunker than a wine cooler. So let's talk about what they talk about in terms of moderate alcohol consumption. Okay, so excessive drinking. In comparison to moderate alcohol consumption, which is deemed normal, I suppose, high-risk drinking is a consumption of four or more drinks on any day, four or more drinks on any day, on one day a week, or eight or more drinks per week for women. Okay, so four on one day, or eight or more drinks per week for women. And then with men, it's five or more drinks on one given day, or 15 or more drinks per week per men. Okay, so that is the definition of high-risk drinking. Tea break, white tea. So again, four drinks in one day for a woman. So that could be just four drinks or more in one day in a week could deem you an alcoholic. Or eight drinks or more in a given week. And then with men, it's five drinks or more in one day, or 15 or more drinks. Then binge drinking is the consumption within about 2 hours of four or more drinks for women, or five or more drinks for men. So drinking four to five drinks in less than 2 hours. Now that's pretty fast. If you ever go to a bar and you're just hanging out with friends, it's pretty easy to drink four drinks in 2 hours. But that's the government's definition of binge drinking. Now excessive alcohol consumption, that's excessive alcohol consumption. All right. So excessive drinking increases the risk of many chronic diseases and violence, which we haven't talked about, but clearly if you're drinking more, it's a higher risk of spousal abuse or harm to yourself, and over time can impair short or long-term cognitive function. Over 90% of U.S. adults who drink excessively report binge drinking, and about 90% of the alcohol consumed by youth under 21 years of age in the United States is in the form of binge drinking. Now, that's not surprising. We know that this is an epidemic in high school and in college. And this is going to be something I'm going to talk about later. Why is it in America that we have such a binge drinking problem? Binge drinking is associated with a wide range of health problems and social problems, including sexually transmitted diseases, unintended pregnancies, accidental injuries, and violent crime, sexual assault, of course. This reminds me, I have to talk about sex ed. We actually have a curriculum at the district where for 2 weeks we have to talk about sex ed. And one of the things we talk about is how alcohol, of course, impairs your inhibition, impairs your judgment, lowers your inhibition, and so you're more likely to be involved in a sexual assault, either the perpetrator or, of course, the victim. Are you suffering from any anxiety or fatigue? Or are you achy all over? Perhaps try some essential oil. Aromatherapy has been around since the beginning of time and has helped innumerable amount of people with their aches and pains and diseases. Kate McCall is a licensed aromatherapist and herbalist, and she can help you. So contact her through the website, and she can make you a great essential oil blend. Also, if you're interested in learning more about essential oils, listen to her podcast, Kate's Apothecary, which you can find on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or anywhere else. Take care. The study found that the rates of alcoholism were higher among men, so 16% of men. So 16% of men are considered either abusing alcohol, which was that first criteria I gave you, or alcohol dependent. 16. Native Americans, 16.6%. People living below the poverty line, 14%. And people living in the Midwest, 14%. So I guess the Midwest is the big drinking area. I bet the area that drinks the less is probably going to be Utah, but probably also like the West Coast. I could see the West Coast, even though there's a lot of microbreweries there. I'm guessing they probably have the lowest percentage of alcoholism, but I could be completely wrong. Stunningly, nearly one in four adults under the age of 30 meet the diagnostic criteria for alcoholism. That is stunning. 25% of people under the age of 30, men and women, are alcoholics. Alcoholics, 25%. That's kind of the stat I drop with STDs at the, in the STD program. I tell them that 45% of American adults have an STD. And they're like, what? And I said, well, statistically, that means if you've slept with two people unprotectedly, you have an STD, you know. They're like, what? You know, it freaks them out. But this is a pretty disturbing stat. 1 in 4 people under the age of 30 are alcoholics. So I want to go back to the binge drinking thing, because in Europe, I think a lot of you guys know that drinking, binge drinking, is not as major of a problem. Now, I'm not saying there isn't alcoholic issues or people having drinking issues in other parts of the world. I'm sure that, you know, the Muslims are refrained from drinking. But as a whole, Europe and, you know, Europe's are their closest cousins. They don't have a drinking problem. Now, is it because it's not some sort of stigma where the kids are literally drinking wine with their meals when they're 12 years old on special occasions, or they're drinking wine with the family at 16. And so when they become of age, it's not taboo. And so they're just drinking and they can drink to moderation. Whereas here in America, it's all taboo. Don't drink until you're 21. And then they just let loose. Is it that? I don't know. I mean, a lot of Americans, of course, here under the age of 21 are drinking. A lot of my high schoolers are drinking. They're finding the alcohol. So I don't know. I mean, let's also look at like Mormons. Mormons and other religious denominations, it's forbidden. It's forbidden to drink alcohol at all. Of course, they don't drink coffee or tea either, but with alcohol per se. So it's not surprising that Utah, which is the locus, the home of the Latter-day Saints, has the lowest alcoholic rates. But the question is, do they seek another crutch? Like with me, I can drink alcohol, one glass of wine a week, and that's it. I don't need a need, because food is my crutch, right? So typically most Americans or most humans, we need some sort of crutch. We need some sort of outlet. And so if it's not drinking, it could be compulsive shopping. It could be compulsive social media, you know, screen addiction. It could be sex. It could be exercise. It could be, you know, vegan obsession. You know, the saying now is, our eating habits, dietary habits, is the new religion. You know, people are so obsessed with what they eat, and they proselytize. Oh, you got to eat vegan. You got to eat vegan. Oh, no, you got to eat paleo. Oh, no, you got to eat keto. And then when people don't want to do it, you get offended. It's almost like it's the new religion, right? But interestingly, and I found this article in the New York Times, Mormonism has the highest, or I should say Utah. And let me distinguish too, because there are non-Mormons that live in Utah. Utah has the highest rate of antidepressant use. So perhaps in Mormonism, since alcohol is not an outlet and neither is coffee, maybe they just go somewhere else and they go to antidepressants. Maybe it's just a correlation. Maybe it has nothing to do with the religion. And I can't say, and I don't want to cast aspersions on the good people that are LDS, but I'm just looking at the statistics and wondering why we Americans, alcoholism is such a major problem, whereas in Europe, it's handled a little more sensibly, and then whether or not it's possible to live your life and not drink and still be happy. And so just because Utah has the highest rate of antidepressant use doesn't mean that that's connected to the religion that forbades it. So I don't know exactly, but what we do know is that alcoholism is a major problem. It's a major social policy problem. You look at the amount of productivity that's lost when people either don't work because they're like just alcoholic on the drunk to the on the curb alcoholics, or even the functional alcoholics who take a day or two, or the homeless. You know, a lot of the homeless either have mental disorders or they're just horrible alcoholics. Either way, it's a horrible thing that needs to be fixed. It does need to be fixed. So what do the researchers think is the driving increase in this rate of alcoholism? So as I mentioned, it's gone up 49% in the last 10 years. That's a big raise. And even though you're like, oh, well, 12%, that's not high. Right? Statistically, it's not high maybe. But if you look at the rate of increase, it's high. And we're not even talking about functional alcoholics. See, functional alcoholics are very pervasive. These are the people, and you see these people all the time, and you might know these people. And the way it works is like they don't drink during the day. And when they get home, they drink. And they drink, like for example, I had a friend when I was in high school, and I won't mention his name, but I would go to his parents' house, and they would just, as soon as they got home from work, they'd drink, and they would drink 2 big packs of beer a night. So by the time they went to sleep, they were drunk. They were drunk, but somehow the next day they woke up and they were fine. They developed tolerance to it and they would go to work. So you see functional alcoholics, the ones who come home and they have a glass or two or a bottle of wine or four beers every night, but they can still function. If you listen to my Confessions of an Obese Child series, listen to the cancer doctor, my father, or Why Did I Become Fat, which is episode one, cancer doctor, I think is 16. And I talk about one of the reasons I became overweight is because my father was an alcoholic, but he was a functional alcoholic. He was a world famous doctor, but he no doubt was drinking all the time. We'd find alcohol in the car and you know, we knew all of his little tricks that he would play. He was a great man, but he was a functional alcoholic. So this study really isn't even taken into account necessarily the functional alcoholics, because the functional alcoholics perhaps would not fit any of these criteria that I had mentioned earlier. You know, failure to go to work, they might not have DUIs, they might not even fight with their spouse because perhaps their spouse is also drinking every night. And so you wonder, it's like, what causes people to become alcoholics? I think a lot of it is just, in my opinion, and this is not going to be backed up any science, but it's early childhood trauma. I think something happens to you at an early age, either some sort of physical abuse or sexual abuse, or you see something that's very traumatic that causes a rift in your mind and you don't deal with it. You kind of suppress it down. And then it's like whatever vice is approached, you're approached by first might be the one that you go to, and then you turn to, let's say, alcoholism instead of food. So for me, when I was a child, it was food, but it could have been alcoholism. I think that's the main reason, because I think that, I mean, what else is, it's like children, right? Children don't binge eat. If you look at a five-year-olds don't know, they're not capable of binge eating, right? So it's the same thing with alcohol. We would all have like a normal view of alcohol, like having a drink or even a drink or two a week, just, you know, sensible drinking, just enjoy the taste of wine and maybe get that nice little high that you get from it. But what's causing this distortion, this aberration of drinking a lot? Something had to throw off the thermostat, and I think it's at an early age that would cause them to drink it. I don't think it's somebody who's never drank their entire life who goes to a party and has a glass of wine, like, oh my God, I love this, and they drink six bottles. I don't know. I don't think it's that. I think it's some sort of early childhood trauma. And it could be other things. I mean, according to the study, you know, it's the rate of joblessness, of course, is going to be causing it. So, you know, you lose your job, you have a lot of despair, you have a lot of depression, you might be going through a divorce, for example. It mentioned that the poor are having a higher rate of alcoholism, so they might have tougher time paying the bills and finding steadier job, because partly because all their jobs are shipped away for the last 30 years. We really don't know. I mean, what we do know is that we have to help these people. And I know, similar to what Jesus said, where Judas is like, you know, we should give this money to the poor. You know, and Jesus said, the poor will always be with us, but I will not. So it's like alcoholism is probably always going to be around, but we have to have some social policy measures, or maybe the church can help out, or AA. But right now it's increasing. It's increasing and it's a major problem. How do we resolve it? I don't know. I mean, if everybody had a good paying job, would alcoholism go away? I don't think so. I think a lot of this stems from childhood trauma. If everybody went to therapy and worked on their childhood trauma, would that help with all the abuses, all the addictions? Probably. Yeah, probably. For sure. I would think so. But it's an issue that we need to address. And by no means am I an expert on alcoholism. I am more of an expert on food addiction. And AA, I don't know if AA works. I did recommend to my mom for many years to go to Al-Anon, the support group for alcoholics. I have gone to Overeaters Anonymous. I'll probably mention that. Actually, I should mention that in the next episode of Confessions of an Obese Child. But I have gone to Al-Anon meetings, and they're very sad, right? Because it's the adults or spouses who talk about the addiction that the affliction of alcoholism that somebody in their family has. And one of the things they learn there is to drop the rope, meaning that you need the people to hit rock bottom. So at the beginning, a lot of these parents were like, when their kids call from the jail, they, you need to bail me out. I drank too much. At the beginning, they're like, sure, son, I'll bail you out. But if you listen to these people who've been in Al-Anon for 20, 30 years, they realize like, no, you have to hit rock bottom. What I will say lastly is that I could see people who kind of stumble into alcoholism, kind of like the way they stumble into Vicodin addiction. Let's say you're going through a very stressful time and, you know, you start drinking a glass of wine every night just to kind of relax you because you have a lot of kids or you had a stressful day at work or something's going on. And of course, you know, wine tastes good for most people. I know some people don't like the taste. So you drink it and you get kind of relaxed. And so the next day or in a week or in a month, you start drinking that every day, right? Just kind of your ritual. Like if you ever watch Cougar Town or even Game of Thrones, Cersei's always drinking the wine. So it's a kind of like a ritual. Like I need my glass of wine. You start fixating, you start fascinating over it. Like during the day, oh, I just can't wait till I can have my glass of wine. And then incrementally it becomes two glasses of wine every night, right? To get off the edge. And then it becomes three glasses. Then it becomes four glasses. And then there you go. You fit the definition of an alcoholic. So all I want to say lastly is just, always need to have a lot of self-awareness, a lot of introspection. So anytime we start taking up new behavior, especially if it's a vice, we need to sit back and think, why am I doing this? It's just like when you're about to binge eat, if any of you are binge eaters, and this is more for the confession series. But before you put that food in your mouth, we need to step back, like, why am I doing this? What am I not addressing? Because we know by putting the food in our mouth, it's going to feel good for the 10, 15 minutes that you're binge eating that inordinate amount of food, but then you're going to feel horrible and you're going to do it again later because you feel so horrible and all this self-loathing. So with the drinking, it's like, what am I doing? What am I not addressing? Are there healthier routes that I can take to get this edge off? And I'm not going to be all like, holier than thou, oh, let's go do exercise, right? No. I mean, it could be journaling. It could be punching a pillow, go to your car and scream. I mean, it could be a host of things. Do yoga, whatever it is. Take a walk. But let's just introspect a little before we start delving into the alcohol, because I think anybody who has been affected by alcoholism, either functional alcoholics or just you know, drunk on the curb alcoholics, will tell you it's horrible and you don't want to wish it on your worst enemy. So let's just be in the moment and just try to stay away from this affliction. Enjoy alcohol too, in moderation, of course, but let's not go overboard. Okay, guys? All right. So take care. Until next time. Bye-bye. God bless.
For listening to Naturopathic Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com, follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.